Q.
I got something here. I want to see if you know what this is.
A cube.
A cube. That's right.
Yeah, I like that.
Hello and welcome from deep inside the of Jolly Rogers Studio. This is the Q Filmcast once again. And if you don't yet know, we are the show which brings to you our review of a particular film currently streaming on Netflix Instant. We gather here each week at Jolly Rogers Studio where we go around the table to tell you what we thought of it. Just so you know, in case you don't, we end each show with a top three list inspired by the movie in question. And we'll get to that movie in question in just 1 second.
All right.
If you want to keep up with us, let's get this out of the way.
Sure.
It's easy to do.
Absolutely.
Twitter, Facebook, iTunes.
Yep, all that.
Doesn't matter. If you just went to the QFilmcast.net, it'd be easy enough.
Sure.
Right there, keep up with us. It's your catch-all, QFilmcast.net. Go there. Tell us what you think of the film we're about to review, or possibly some of the ones from the past. We don't care. We just love visitors. Yeah. That's right. So let's get into it, guys. Introductions. I am Michael, your host, as always, along with, to my left, we're talking about James Hardsub Savage.
What's up? Maestro.
I love that. I like the way you said that.
What's up, Maestro?
You were real lip smacky right there.
Yeah. What's up, Maestro?
Oh, I'm doing okay, Savage. How are you doing today?
Doing all right. Had a good week.
Yeah.
How was your week?
How was my week?
Yeah.
Oh, well, let's talk about that for a second. Savage, did you know that not at one time did God throw an 18-wheel truck at me?
Not once.
And bounce me out into nowhere for 5 years.
No.
Didn't
not.
Happen.
Filled with milk.
Yeah. If he could have got a cookie truck to like jackknife right there.
Awesome. Like an Oreo truck.
That'd be a bad time to go into a coma right there.
I know. You're like, whoa, give me a cookie.
Diabetic coma.
Hey, maybe that's what happened. Well, yeah, right. I got a theory now. Now I have a theory.
Okay.
I'll talk about it later.
Right.
Also, Savage, you know, not at one time was I impaled by a pair of scissors.
Good.
Yeah. Best part, though, did not have to cancel my hockey game. You want to know why?
Why?
Because the ice was going to break. There's your clues.
There's
Max Gumbo Johnson.
I need no introduction. I knew you were going to say that.
I love it. It's confidence.
Yeah.
It's almost like I grabbed your hand and just had a presence.
Really?
Premonition.
Is that why you're always holding my hand throughout the show?
Yes.
You're always trying to figure out?
That's exactly what it is.
Right.
Well, if I can't hold your hand, I'm playing footsie.
Oh, my God. Adam the Bomb Rogers, greatest producer in the history of this Q Filmcast.
Yeah.
Right
oh,
there.
Hi.
Oh, hi. I didn't do it as well as Max did.
Right.
All right, let's talk about the film. We've given you so many clues, it's
yeah,
stupid.
You've got to figure it out.
Yeah.
Right now.
I'm going to call it a great film. I'm going to call it a film from 1983. I'm going to call it my selection this week.
All right.
And by the way, what we're doing, in case you do not know, we're picking films
yes.
that we deem as a 10, or we used to deem as a 10.
Right. Okay,
maybe we watched it again. But the premise of this round is we're picking films from Netflix that we think are 10s. We're going to bring them in here.
Right.
And I'm going to see how many people think this is a 10. Max, yeah. next week, we're going to see how many people think yours is a 10 and agree with you.
Right.
So this week, I picked, and I queued up, the 1983 film, The Dead Zone.
The Dead Zone.
The Dead Zone. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Stephen King adaptation. And I'll tell you why. I thought it'd be good conversation for a few reasons. You've got Stephen King. You got Stephen King, David Cronenberg, and Christopher Walken. And you know what they're doing, Max?
Making the movie.
No, they're working in synchronicity.
Oh, that okay, you used the word correctly that
there
time.
You like
there
that?
That's,
you like
I
that?
Like that.
All right, guys, so that's what this week's show is, The Dead Zone. And as we stated previously, all these things, these Q Filmcast nuggets, these little gems that we put out every week.
Yeah.
I'm confident saying that.
Why not?
They all inspire top three, Savage.
Sure, sure.
This week inspired top three. A little bit of a duo. A little bit of a little duo thing
sort
going
of
on
like
here.
A top six.
It's right. top six. We're going to combine them. Kind of like a McDLT.
Right.
You got the hot and the cold.
Yep.
Hot stays hot, cool stays cool. Did
That's
I just
right.
make a McDLT reference? Does anybody know what I'm talking about?
I do.
I love
okay,
that.
Thank
from
you.
1983.
Double, double cheese, cheeseburger, burger, please. We're talking about top three best and worst Stephen King adaptations.
Right.
We're going to get into that at the end of the show.
So many to choose from.
There really are.
I'm having a hard time.
Yeah.
I'm still having a hard time.
Right.
I'm going to have to be inspired.
Right.
I'm not.
It's going to be an organic list for me because
yeah,
how do you do that?
I know. All right. I'm having a difficult time as well.
I'm having a hard time with the best ones. The worst ones, no problem.
Easy.
Let's just see what happens.
Okay.
Let's see what transpires. But that's your show this week, 1983's Dead Zone, starring Christopher Walken, Brooke Adams, Tom Skerritt, scary Martin Sheen, Colleen Dewhurst, who is Campbell Scott's mother. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah, keeping it in the family.
And Nicholas Campbell as Dodd. I saw his face. I saw his face. Not afraid. She knows him. Yeah, that guy, Campbell's guy. I'm sorry, Nicholas Campbell as Dodd. Based on the book by Stephen King, directed by David Cronenberg, one of his earlier films.
Cronenberg.
But not one of his first films, Max. What's some films that came out before this directed by David Cronenberg?
Oh, gosh. The Brood. Rabid.
Scanners.
Scanners. What else? The Scanners was the year before, I think.
Video
Scanners.
Drone.
81, 82.
Videodrome.
Shivers. Videodrome. Was that first? I think that came out after. No, that came out before.
Same year.
Okay. Yeah.
But I think it came out before, though.
Well, maybe before. I don't know. Early 80s. That
kind
of
stuff.
That same period.
You know, if I'm 10 years old, you know, 1982, and I'm watching Scanners, which I did, it kind of messed my life up a little bit.
Sure.
I watched that recently, actually.
How does it hold up?
It holds up, except for the lead actor. He's terrible.
Ironside? Michael Ironside?
No, he's not the lead actor.
Well, I mean, it holds up as a timestamp. It's still a timestamp.
It's a great movie, though.
But I tell you what, at 10 years old, it's kind of screwed me up.
Oh, yeah. The dude's head blowing up and stuff.
I even looked at the box and was like, I don't like this.
Scanning.
But I have to watch it.
Yeah.
I don't like this.
So we have some things to talk about. If you've seen this film, keep listening to see if you agree or disagree. Or, you know, you can keep listening if you haven't. Maybe it's something you might want to queue up.
Sure.
We don't know.
You got to watch The Dead Zone.
You got to watch The Dead Zone.
It's a 10 to Mike.
It's a 10 to Michael. Yes, it is. Without a doubt, man, this one. Let's talk about this here, though. Let's talk about what the critics gave this film. Savage, IMDb.
Yep.
Something, point something. Okay. Come on now. All IMDb, right. Something, point something.
7.2.
Look at that. It's close. It's off the crossbar and out. 7.3.
Oh.
Ooh.
Dope.
Yeah, what do you think about critics-wise, Max?
0.1% off.
I know, right?
Rotten Tomatoes, critics, I'll go 85.
90% critics.
Ooh, wow. Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. I saw it coming.
Yeah. Of course.
I grabbed my own hand.
Yeah?
I seen it, yeah. Oh, wait, that wasn't my hand.
Right. I don't want to know.
Sorry, never mind.
Users on Rotten Tomatoes, I'll go 85.
76%.
Oh! Morons.
All right, let's talk about what this film is. By the way, first of all,
yes.
Anybody read the book?
Me.
I did. I read the book after I watched the movie. I thought, I got to see what this came from.
I read the book before I saw the movie. Yes, I know it came out in 1983. Yes, I read the book prior to that. I was only 12. The
book came out in 1979.
I had to get my parents to check out Stephen King books for me at the library.
Yeah,
they're like, you don't need to read that. It's like, Mom, Dad said I can read it. Yeah, he can read it. Let him have it.
Adam, have you read the book?
I have not.
It's a great book. It's a much more in-depth book.
Yeah.
Like, it goes back to, like, Johnny Smith when he was a kid.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about what this movie is, though. Waking up from a 5-year coma after a car accident, former schoolteacher Johnny Smith discovers that he can see people's futures and pasts when he touches them. Many consider his talent a gift, but Johnny feels cursed. His fiancée married another man during his coma, and people clamor for him to solve their problems. When Johnny has a disturbing vision after he shakes the hand of an ambitious and a moral politician, he must decide if he should take drastic actions to change the future. That's quick, precise. Let's get on with this. The Dead Zone was first published in 1979, and is the only collaboration between Cronenberg and Stephen King. That's a shame.
That's a
low down.
Crying shame.
Maybe they don't like each other.
They probably never met. Upon its release, the film was met with strong reviews, but after good word of mouth, became a modest box office hit, doubling its $10 million budget. Along with both Walken's performance and Cronenberg's atmospheric directing, Michael Kanin was also praised for the rich score in the film. The film won Best Picture at the Saturn Awards for Best Horror Film, and Cronenberg for Best Director. I don't know about that. And to this day is considered an Oscar snub by many.
I can see that.
You know what we're going to do right here? Wait, I have a future. I have a futuristic vision. Really? I can see into the future.
Dude.
I think that you're going to hear a trailer right now.
If the future were in your hands.
Daughter's screaming. The house is burning.
Would you change it?
Hurry up! It's not too late.
Touch this man's hand, and you are in the grip of the Dead Zone.
I've had another episode.
Only the imagination of author Stephen King could take you there.
Johnny, wait!
With a power that alters the future lives of those you love.
You want to kill your own son?
I want you out of here.
I'm scared, Dad.
Or of those you fear.
I have had a vision that I am going to be president of the United States someday, and nobody,
I mean nobody,
gonna stop me.
Is it a power for good or for evil?
If God has seen fit to bless you with this gift, you should use it.
Bless me?
You're a devil.
are you? Who sent you?
I'm scared, sir.
What's happening to me?
We're gonna get married, Johnny. Don't leave me, please.
Didn't you see how clear it all is? Not only can you see the future, I can change it.
All right, we're back. Q Filmcast. Talking about The Dead Zone, the trailer you just heard from, 1983's David Cronenberg-directed Stephen King adaptation, starring Christopher Walken.
Yeah.
And the guy who played Dodd. Gazebo.
And a bunch of other people. I was reading the credits. I was like, man, what happened to that dude? Oh, man, what happened to that lady? What happened to him? Where'd they go? I hadn't seen these names in...
Since the 80s.
Since 1983.
Ramon Estevez played the newspaper kid with a camera.
That's insane.
That's actually one of the the facts and figures. And let's get into that. Producer, right. You ready? Let's talk about a little bit of trivia about this film.
Yeah.
I'm talking about just some things.
Yeah,
some things
you know?
I found out. Let me tell you what I found out.
What did you find out?
I did it all natural. Mm. Didn't consult a psychic. I looked it up on the interwebs. Here's what I found out. Did you know, Savage,
yes,
that Cronenberg fired a .357 Magnum loaded with blanks just off camera to make Walken's flinches seem more involuntary? This was Christopher Walken's own idea.
Yeah, because Christopher Walken is terrified of handguns.
Really?
I mean, he's freaked out by them.
He freaked out of handguns.
I saw Deer Hunter.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. That's probably why.
Yeah.
But anyways, that's where the flinching came from. It seems so abrupt that Cronenberg's in back of him firing off blanks. That's a great tool there.
Sounds like a pecking paw.
That's how you do thing. It. Did you know, I do not understand this. Max, my mind is blown by my own fact and my own figure, my own trivia. What the hell? Bill Murray was Stephen King's choice for the part of Johnny Smith, and it almost happened?
Hey, I'm not going to argue with that.
That's awful.
No.
That's what? Awful.
Bill Murray?
Yeah.
Bill Murray in anything is not awful.
No.
This was 83. Stephen King was still drunk.
Yeah, that just would not work, in my opinion. Did you know that during the time Michael Kamen was composing the music for this film, which is magnanimous, in my opinion, one of
good.
The best scores ever in film. He would play the score on his piano in his home. He received several complaints by his neighbors who asked, hey, can you please stop playing that music? I can't sleep and it's giving my kid nightmares.
Then he knew it worked.
Perfect.
Right. Yeah. Producer, did you know that director David Cronenberg had to reshoot the scene in which John Smith has his first premonition? Check this out. It showed the little girl's room burning. Remember that scene?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And a small E.T. doll could be seen on one of the shelves. After production, they found out, wait a minute, we better use that because Universal said if you do, I'll sue you.
They should have gone ahead and done it.
Come on. You had to reshoot it because there was an E.T. in there?
That's lame.
That's the way things is.
Dang lawyers. I like this one. Check this out. The sweat on Christopher Walken's face during the burning bedroom sequence was, in fact, a flame retardant chemical. They were going to wipe it off, and they thought, wait a minute, that looks pretty good.
It did look good.
It looked all sweaty.
Did you know that Hal Holbrook was Cronenberg's original choice to play Sheriff Bannerman?
That would have been awesome. I can see
that. But I like Skerritt. I'm a Skerritt man.
Dino De Laurentiis rejected the idea because he never heard of Hal Holbrook. Huh?
Because when his Kong die, everybody cry.
He did King Kong.
Oh, he did. That's right. So there's your facts. There's your figures. There's your trivia. Let's talk about how we're going to rate this film.
Right.
Because we don't use facts. I'm sorry. We don't use thumbs up.
We don't use facts at all.
We don't use facts. We completely make it up.
Sounds like the news.
Right.
Let's talk about how we're going to rate this film, Max.
Yeah, we don't use thumbs up and thumbs down. And that is just completely too predictable.
It's too predictable. Yeah.
That's and I predictable. Had, yeah,
very nicely done. We're going to use premonitions.
There you go.
1 to 10 premonitions. Now, you want me to get mine out of the way? Because it's no secret. You didn't need a psychic to tell you this was a 10 for me.
No.
And let me tell you why it's a 10.
Okay.
Let me get this out of the way, guys. And
sure.
You can back me up or tell me I'm nuts.
Okay.
Here's what I have. Why do I love The Dead Zone? Why do I love this movie? Why do I give it a 10? Let me tell you something right now, Savage. I think you're going to part ways with me.
Tell me.
If we just talked about the scenes, Walken, Cronenberg, technique, and the craft, I could actually give it a 10 on that. I'm going to give this thing a 10, and I love this movie because it's one of the films that changed my perception of how a movie could just make me feel. Okay, they are just those definitive films that are clear landmarks, whether it's personal or abroad, but this is one of them. When I saw this, I was 12 years old, 1984, okay? I believe it was my first Dr. Strangelove moment. I took my shirt off, Max.
Dance.
No, I was breakdancing, because it's 1984. Right. See, breakdancing was big, yeah. When I get excited about a film, I take my shirt off and dance.
So I've heard.
It was a mesmerizing experience. I'm telling you, I remember it clearly from that awesome opening credit. I mean, who put the thought into that? Just
The one they ripped off from Alien.
Right, but shut up, Max. But still, right. I don't know. For me, it was unique.
No, it was good. It was good.
But set against that Kamen's perfect score, man, I was hypnotized. And then you see Walken's face as he's reading The Raven. My 12-year-old brain was like, man, this feels different. What? Yo.
What's going on?
And then Cronenberg, man, he just goes to work. He constructs these scenes with such clarity of vision that you wonder if he's psychic. He never changes his idea of how something should look in order to accommodate the movie. I mean, honest to God, if he thinks, okay, there needs to be a fishbowl exploding, it's going to happen. He doesn't back down. He has such a vision.
Right.
It's like storyboard after storyboard. The guy knows how to captivate you with details. I'm going to stop here. I don't want to get into the meat of it just yet, the scenes. I'm just going to tell you, this is a film that means a lot to me. It affected me greatly in 84. It did again the other night. It's masterful storytelling of a masterful story. It's not overly complicated. It is a bit lean, but my God, are the players and the parts fantastic. Walken, Cronenberg, King, lightning in a bottle. When you're sitting there and you say, okay, I don't think this could happen with any other director, any other actor, I think you're hitting something very special here. It's a sweet spot. Max, once again, in synchronicity, buddy.
In synchronicity.
This movie's ripe with it.
All the parts just lined up perfectly.
Yeah. I love this movie. Savage, go. Am I wrong? Am I right? Am I crazy? How close are you?
Well, I remember watching this film years and years ago, and for some reason it just hit me wrong years ago, and I was eager to revisit it, especially, you know, coming off your recommendation that it's a 10. Cronenberg, King, Walken, Martin Sheen, Tom Skerritt. I'm a Skerritt man, you know? No, this one doesn't sit well with me at all. To me, this is everything that's wrong with trying to adapt a Stephen King film.
Whoa. Yeah. I don't get that.
Everything that's wrong with it. And it's a shame because you got all these powerhouse people there, man.
How could you not like this movie?
I don't like this film at all.
I'm baffled by that.
This film is a terrible film. This is a terrible, terrible film. I can't go
this
more
than
this
is a Lollapalooza.
I can't go more than a 3 for this.
Are you serious?
I'm serious. I am dead serious.
He's in a dead zone.
He's in a dead zone.
I want to go back into your past and see what the hell happened to you to make you come to this conclusion, because this is a masterpiece.
It's not.
It's no. It's all style. It's so fantastic.
No.
We're going to talk about this.
Yes, we are.
Stay right there.
I will.
A 3 on
Yeah, I got to hear
that. A 3 on Cronenberg's Dead Zone.
Yes.
When you delve into the interwebs, as I say, and you give me some of the best translations of King's work, this is out there all the time. It's always like,
yeah,
great, but have you seen Dead Zone?
Yeah, so is The Running Man, okay?
The Running Man is not a terrible film.
Yeah.
And it's a bad adaptation.
Okay, whatever.
The Shining's a great film, but it's a bad adaptation.
I don't like him anymore. I don't like him either. You're dismissed, sir. I hope God throws an 18-wheel truck at you.
Right.
All right, 3. Can I go over to the producer right next? I want to get him. He's going right around the table here. Orderly, sir. What are you going to give Cronenberg, his film, 1983's The Dead Zone?
Oh, as much as I love King and as much as I love Cronenberg, I can only... No, hang on. I like this film. I give it a 7. But okay. I had a lot of, or not a lot, but some issues with it that just kind of unnerved me, I guess. But just, it was good. It was good.
Did you go into a coma halfway through? Were you in a coma during what we were watching this film?
No.
Were you? Oh. Okay, no, that's good, though. 7.
I liked it, but...
Yeah, you've probably seen it a bunch.
Yeah, I've seen it a bunch.
Max, what are you going to do? We have a 3. Adam has a 7. That's cool. I'm going 10. I'm pushing 10, okay? But I'm going to give it a 10. Max, what are you going?
I'm going to go a 9. I hadn't seen this movie in a long time. I mean, a long, long time. I'd forgotten most of it. But I remember the book. This follows the book really closely. And when you said this was a bit lean, man, that's stretching it. This is one of the leanest. I mean, this is a straightforward story and a straightforward movie. There's nothing to cut out of this movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, within 15 minutes, he's up from the coma, and the movie's off and running.
And I don't think that's a slight on the film.
No, it's not at all.
It paced, man.
It was fantastic. I love that aspect of it. There was nothing that was wasted in this movie. Nothing. And it hit all the right notes. The only reason I can't go a 10 is because it's so lean and it's so well told and so compact and everything. There's nothing to really go back and revisit as far as I'm concerned.
Okay.
But as a pure piece of filmmaking and storytelling, it's damn near perfect.
The shots are incredible. The emotion.
Fantastic. It's great. It's really, really. I'd forgotten how much I like this movie. It really is good. It's a great, great movie.
And it's one of the more accessible Cronenberg films, too.
It's one of the most accessible ones, yeah.
Yeah, but I consider this mastercraft as far as, okay, we got a budget, we got our actors. Let's tell these stories. Let's set up these scenes and deliver them with precision and effectiveness. I mean, the shots on this thing, just where the camera lies and where it's hovering, to me, are spellbinding. Savage is going to tell me I'm crazy. Why don't we take a quick break right now? Listen to one clip right here of The Dead Zone. Right. Set the tone. Here you go.
It's a miracle, John.
I know.
was lucky. Look at a scratch.
The Lord has delivered you from your trance.
Remember what we discussed, Mrs. Smith, please. What's she talking about?
Shh.
You've been in a coma, Johnny. Not a trance.
Coma. For how long?
We're just glad to have you back, son. That's all that matters.
How long? Dad.
Five years, Tom. Lost for 5 years. And now reborn unto me.
Okay, we're back. There you are. David Cronenberg's The Dead Zone, 1983. Where should we go from here? We have some people that love it. I love it. Savage doesn't like it. Terrible film.
It is a terrible film.
I think you're just trying to be confrontational.
I'm not.
All right. You lead it off. I'll give you the reins right here, man.
All right,
you tell me what's terrible about this film.
Well, I went into this open-minded. I mean, I remember just it not liking it from years ago, but I'm like Max. I haven't seen it in like 20 years. And I just remember not resonating. And so I was kind of eager to watch it again. And then starts off with that weird double credit or that double title sequence where it's like, The Dead Zone. And then it does that weird build Dead Zone thing. So it's like there's two opening title sequences. It's like, okay, that's a little weird.
What do you mean the double title sequence?
Yeah, there's a double. It's like whoever presents The Dead Zone. And then there's that credit sequence that spells out The Dead Zone. You know, so
that was great.
I mean, I like that effect for sure, but it was weird. It's like, that's the first time I've seen two. Why would you show the title?
Okay, enough of the title.
Right. You know, but it's weird. It's like, so it off put me right from the start. Like, well, that's weird. You know, Christopher Walken's Christopher Walken. I didn't buy him as the teacher. I didn't buy him. I mean, he's almost a caricature of himself, and you can tell it started then that he's Walken, you know, and I don't mind Christopher Walken. I mean, I like him. He's what he is. And he is that in this. And when the Cronenberg thing, I mean, there's so many conveniences in this that they turn into contrivances. And part of that is when you say it's lean, I say it's forced. It's almost like you're shoehorning in these bullet points. Okay, we've got to establish that he had a relationship. We've got to establish he got in a coma. We've got to establish that his mom was religious. We've got to establish. And it's like, boom, boom, you've got to force these things in there. And that's not a storytelling. Those are points of fact that you're trying to do. And that's where the failure of the adaptation comes in. You're taking something that Stephen King does masterfully, which is internalizing the thought process in his novels. That works in a novel, but it doesn't really work on screen. And, you know, Walken's jerky head premonition, screechy violin thing, you know, that's a one-trick pony. That works the first time, maybe the second time. When Cronenberg started doing Cronenberg, the first premonition in the fire thing, I'm like, okay, I'm on board. This I like. This is where he's in the vision. I was like, okay, man, let's go with this. But that only happens twice. That only happens twice where he's in the vision with what's going on. That time in the fire and then on the gazebo. And the other time the premonitions are just he's seeing things.
Well, what else is a premonition?
Okay. Well, no.
What are you talking about?
But that's the Cronenberg thing. It lost me there. It's like either you're in it, like it establishes with the very first one, where he's in the bed and it's on fire, establishes that this is the reality of this vision. And then he just drops that.
Well, you know, you go back to another vision later on in the film where he grabs the kid and he's underneath the water and it shows him underneath the water holding the boy. I mean, I don't know why you have to see him in the vision every time.
Well, it's
in the future ones, he's there. I guess he's not with Martin Sheen in him, but I didn't see that as any kind of problem with the film.
Well, but again, it's you say it's lean, and I understand that point. To me, that leanness seems forced. It seems
no.
Well, to me, it does. It seems like you're not telling a story. You're presenting these points in time, which I found that disjarring. I couldn't follow the timeline of the thing. I mean, we can come back around to me if y'all want to get some of your stuff, because I can point out these things all day long.
Yeah, well, let's get back to that.
Okay,
right, I see where you're going. Maybe it's just like the way it kind of glued itself together.
Yeah.
When I say lean, it felt like someone opened up a book and said, "I have a tale to tell," and it's like, "All right, let's just get to what it is you need to know, and let your mind fill in the gaps." Everything worked as far as that, and there are distinct, almost hard beginnings and hard endings. Here's the part where Johnny is introduced, and he goes into a coma, and he comes out. Here's the part where the serial killer thing takes place. Here's the chapter where we're going to meet Johnny and Martin Sheen, where it goes off into that tangent. But it all felt interestingly appropriate. The storytelling is so well-paced, and the movie's only like an hour and 40 minutes long, 45 minutes long.
94 minutes, I think.
See. It felt like it told so much in that hour and 45 minutes that it didn't have to tell me more. It really paced and worked out very, very well for me. And I love the relationships here. We're going to get into that. The emotion. I talk about the emotion of this movie. You had to, at the end, feel like Johnny had nowhere else to go, like he was completely heartbroken. There was nothing left for him here in this present. And the way they did that, when he slams that door and you can see him crumble to where here he is hugging a kid who has no idea why he would even have to be hugged, but yet that's all Johnny has. When it got me to emotionally understand that, okay, this is a guy who has nowhere to go, and we still have, you know, we're only an hour into the film, it delivered the emotional aspect of it very, very well. And as far as all the jarring stuff, and you say the screeching and all that, I loved it. I mean, I loved it. I know you say it's a one-trick pony thing, and we're going to see it, you know, several times throughout the film, but every time they showed it, it felt like, yeah, that's how I want you to deliver it to me. I mean, how else are you going to punch me in the head with a vision? Except Christopher Walken's eyeballs bugging out of his head in a screech. And for me, even though I know it's coming and I've seen it, I still felt myself very attracted to that idea of how we're going to deliver these visions and these premonitions to the audience. And my God, I'm going to give a real big nod to Martin Sheen. What a great performance.
Oh, yeah.
What a great performance. Yeah. And you say Walken was being Walken and all this stuff. I bought him completely as this guy.
I completely disagree with yeah, the whole Walken thing.
Go ahead, Max.
You're projecting current Walken, and everybody does an impression of him now. And they say, oh, it's Walken. Yeah, we got to do the Walkenisms. That didn't exist in 1983. He was I had honestly forgotten, because you see so much of these Walken impressions now, and he just does these little bit parts in just any movie, and it doesn't kill his career at all. Not at all. But I watched this the other night, and I was like, wow, I forgot what a good actor that dude was, because he's doing so much of this silly stuff now. He's fantastic. He is great in this movie. He brings 100%, and he kills it.
You know, you're going to address a scene. And but by the way, a lot of this movie is style for me. It's incredibly stylistic. I'll give you that. It hinges a lot on style. How are you going to address a scene of this intensity and of this, what do you want to call it, suspense, without someone who can bring that vibe and that energy to the scene? This is perfectly cast because the Walken. All he does
know.
Is show
Maybe
up on.
Bill Murray could have done it.
No, Bill Murray could have done it.
Bill Murray could have done it. First off, he could have. But no. I think he pulls off a major coup here to play a character that has got so much riding on what he's gone through in the past. I mean, he told his girlfriend, "Nah, there's time for that. There's time for that. We'll wait for that."
Yeah.
And then he gets in a wreck on the way home, and he goes into a coma for 5 years, and he's got to wake up to this?
Right.
Yeah.
And he wakes up, and his parents just happen to be waiting outside the door when he wakes
cares,
up.
Who cares, man?
From a five-year coma.
No, he hadn't just woken up.
That's called a contrivance.
He hadn't just woken up.
He just didn't wake up and go, yawn, Rumpelstiltskin style. The doctors have probably been monitoring him.
Oh, yeah.
They know he's coming
they
out.
Know
rapid
he was
eye
coming
movement
up.
Happens. But, I mean, if you're going to pick the film apart, you can pick all kinds of films apart like that. How was the story told? What emotion was brought to you through these scenes? And Max is saying it right. Max is saying, hey, the scene before that, we know Johnny thinks he has all the time in the world. No, you don't.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, and it's a constant setup and delivery of that. Setup and delivery
that's
of that.
That's all this is a setup and delivery. Setup. I mean, it's not a storytelling. It's a presentation. It's cherry picking from the novel, these points of fact from the novel. And this is exactly what's wrong when you adapt a novel poorly.
But why does it have to be such
a
terrible
thing? No, this was
thing?
Not a poorly adapted novel. This follows the book. Point for point
okay,
for
have
point
you read
point.
The book, James?
No.
Then you can't say it's a poorly adapted.
Yeah,
no,
can you say
I can't.
That if you
I
haven't
can
read it?
I can because it's the story isn't being told.
No, you can't.
You're
you haven't read this. You haven't
picking,
read the book.
You're
saying
facts
well, but, wait,
from
you're
a story.
You're saying it's a poor adaptation, but you haven't read the book.
Right.
It's so a great adaptation.
Anything
right,
about his childhood?
Well, you know, it doesn't have.
It doesn't need to be there.
Okay.
It's not.
You know how much stuff gets cut out of books all the time when they make movies.
Here's my point, Savage. You know, you're not going to sit down and make a movie. Oh, we got to make this scene out of this page. Let's move to the next page. Make that scene. Move out of the next page. You have to pick and choose. And why this works for me is because they picked out and they chose exactly what they needed to make this thing crackle in 90 minutes. Adam, what do you have here? I hadn't heard from you.
Oh, okay. I do want to say a couple of things. I know y'all are going to talk about all the good things. There's two things I do want to bring up, though. First one was I was really wanting to know more about the scissors and why the killer carried those scissors. I was hoping there was some type of backstory on that.
I think it's kind of cool that you don't.
I kind of wanted to know something about the scissors and what was the significance of
well,
this
you
killer.
Well, you shouldn't run with scissors, Adam.
Yeah. And the other thing, I wanted to know what led up to Martin Sheen's character causing nuclear war.
Well, you don't need.
Know,
why do you need
I
to
know,
know
you
that?
Don't really need it, but it was something I personally kind of wish I would know more about.
Watch a documentary on the Cold War. I don't know what to tell you. You don't need to know that.
But well, that no no. It would have gave reason why he needed to kill this guy. I mean, what happens if Martin Sheen was actually trying to do something good in a way? I hate saying
okay.
it that.
Okay, can we move on to
it? No, do you get what I'm trying to say,
yeah,
though?
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
I don't.
But
yeah,
what
I,
if it was a good thing that he was doing? It
thermonuclear
was protecting
war
his,
is a good thing.
Well, hold on. They address that in the scene. Apparently, it's not a good thing because he said, if you don't do it, I'm going to cut your hand off and put it on that thing. You're crazy, blah, blah, blah. Apparently, Martin Sheen was the only guy that wanted to do this.
Yeah. And let's get into some scenes, guys. I think we got a little bit of heat going.
Right.
As far as what we translated from the scenes, what we got from the scenes.
The scenes.
The scenes.
Let's talk about some scenes. Let's rifle through them.
All right.
It's easy to talk about the scissor scene, which Adam mentioned earlier. What a scene that was. I tell you, how are you going to set that one up any better than what they did?
That whole sequence when they were on there looking for the guy was great.
And the way the camera moved and rode up and down the staircase with the funky green walls. There's so much oddity in this film. There's just unique and distinct oddities in this film. I want to talk about something else, though. I want to go back to these relationships. There's some scenes that really stand out to me. I told you about Johnny's final goodbye to Sarah. So effective to me. I mean, here it is. You knew he's done. There's nothing left for him anymore. He can't go there. He can't go back home. He's a guy who somehow is out of time. He didn't belong here. Also, back to the other scene, too, when she goes and she spends the night with him. I'm thinking, you bitch, why are you doing this to this guy? And you see how lost he is. For that time when she's there with her kid, having dinner with his father, the joy that's on his face, he's happy. He's where he should be.
And then he just made a bookcase.
Thank you. I love that scene because that is, once again, one of those emotional powerhouse scenes. She takes the kid and says, you know, this was a one-off thing.
Yeah.
I had to give you this as a gift. I'm thinking, you're tearing the guy's life apart. You're not giving him a gift. And he crumples. And you can see that, I'm going to call a great performance from Walken. That's one of the scenes that highlights that. He's devastated. I felt devastated. That's where I go when I remember this movie. I remember Walken's performance. Savage, I think it's a fantastic performance.
I agree.
All right, well, what do you think? When you think of scenes, what do you think of? Anything that you did like about the scenes?
I like the Cronenberg stuff where it's like where he kind of stamps it as his own. I really like that. I like the first vision with the fire. I thought that was really well done. I like the gazebo thing where he's witnessing this thing being there. I mean, again, I go back to these contrivances. Oh, it's the deputy. Shocker, you know? And just so many of these things, I had so many WTF moments watching this. Like, what's going on here? The thermonuclear war brought to you by Atari, apparently. Mm-hmm. That's just a.
It was 83.
I can forgive it that, but it really did look like some ColecoVision stuff.
But there is a campiness to it, Savage. Yeah. But that's part of the fun of this movie too. That's part of the Cronenberg of this film.
Well,
you know,
I don't see that it's fun in any way. I mean, I like Martin Sheen. I thought he was a powerhouse when he burst on the scene. I'm like, okay. I mean, he's really got a presence. He really does have a presence. Yeah. And then holding up the baby, come on.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Loved it.
That ending, whoa. Come on, that ending is fantastic.
I'm going to bring something up here.
Yeah.
If you're going to hold up a baby or something, witness, not the good way to do it, this was the way to do it.
Mm-hmm. I usually, when I hold up a baby in front of a firing squad, I hold it by one leg and swing it around my head at him. That's what I usually do.
That's how you're going to do it.
Yeah.
Not that witness crap.
Well, if you got a problem with him holding up the baby, you take that up with King, not Cronenberg.
Yeah, because I thought that was fantastic. I mean, even now, that is such a great twist and such a great play into the story. because no one sees that coming. When the first time you see it, you don't see that coming.
And I didn't.
And, you know, look, it's also got a bit of an Edgar Allan Poe feel to this movie. It just felt very Poe-ish to me.
Nevermore.
Yeah, I mean, and that maybe that's part of why it opens up that way.
Yeah.
I thought that was great, Savage. I don't know what you're talking about there. Max, what do you have?
I like the Poe thing that you mentioned just now, because, like, you go back to Poe or EC Comics from the 50s, everything had this this sort of ironic twist to it. It's like, this isn't the way it was supposed to go, but it worked anyway. He was there to kill the guy. All he wanted to do was kill the guy.
Yeah.
And he inadvertently ruined his career anyway and forced him to commit suicide. Spoiler alert.
Which is a much better way for this guy to go.
Yeah,
than
and which
being
is
shot.
A which is a much better ending. I mean, if he would have shot him. Okay, okay, now what?
Yeah.
Movie's over.
This guy needed, because the whole thing leading up to that is a kind of a dissection of Sheen's character. The guy is a dangerous man. And you sense it. He's an unhinged, diabolical person. He needed to be brought down by his own evilness, and that's what that
not happened. Made a martyr.
The other thing that, you know, if you look at that irony or whatever you want to call it, the whole circle of the story, Walken, he was dying. He knew it. His doctor, played by the awesome Herbert Lom, his doctor knew it, but he was lying to him the whole time. He's like, look, it's getting worse. Just tell me, no more pills. So Christopher Walken knew, look, I'm done. I'm a goner.
Yeah.
I might as well try and do some good with what I've got left with this gift that I've been given, or this curse, whichever way you want to look at it. That's what he wanted to do. He didn't mean to go in there and get killed. Probably thought he was. He was either going to get killed or sent to prison, one or the other.
Yeah.
So he was done for either way.
Yeah. Let's talk about these premonitions. Amy's mother.
Amy's mom.
Amy's my daughter. Your daughter is burning. You know.
She's screaming.
Yeah, she's screaming.
Amy's screaming.
Hurry up!
It's not too late.
Yeah.
It's not too late. She's screaming.
Exactly.
My favorite hand grabbing scene was the press conference.
Oh, let's talk about that.
That was
press
so,
conference was
so dumb.
That was a great
that was
scene.
Great. You
so
know what?
Dumb.
Just turn your mic
Why
off.
Is
Let
that
me and
dumb?
Michael talk.
Because the reporter, the press reporter, becomes part of the story.
Well, of
so
course
what?
He is. That's what he wants to do. He wants to say, well, let's test you out. Let's try you out.
I thought that was
great. Let me get on camera with you and do the thing.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
No.
What?
I
mean,
reporters are narcissistic a-holes. They want to get in there. They want to be the story.
Savage.
That's
had,
the whole point of it.
You had drama in that scene. You had irony in that scene. You had tension in that scene. What's wrong with that scene? I don't understand what you have a problem with. That was great, because here's the guy. He
loved
like,
it.
He's like, all right, let me go ahead and let me flip the script here on this guy and expose him for a fraud. And I thought he just might. But boy, does Johnny slam him to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Get let go of me, you freak. And that's when the mother dies, one of these oddities, gargling, you know.
Yeah.
So Cronenberg.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why does Cronenberg have to have her gargling like that? Why? Because he's Cronenberg.
Isn't that body horror thing?
Now, touch my hand. Hey, John, touch my hand. Tell me. Is my house on fire, John?
Do you want me to stop this?
Tell you about your house.
Mm-hmm.
What do you want to know? Do you want to know the future? You want to know if you're going to die? Is that it? You're going to die. I'm going to die. You want to know if you're going to die tomorrow. Is that right? You want to know why your sister killed herself.
Right.
You don't. Go.
It's not all right.
It's okay.
It's not okay.
Okay.
I could tell you now.
I'm not going to talk about that. Let go of me, you freak!
Stop it. Please stop it. Please. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
And we're talking about Dead Zone 1983. We're having a pretty meaty discussion about it. One thing, though. Adam, I want to ask you about this now. Everybody remembers the gazebo scene, the Frank Dodd scene. Oh, you mean that film where the guy slammed his face down on the scissors? I loved it. And you know, you said something about, I wish I knew more about this. I remember thinking, I'm so glad I'm not being told this. I want to be left to wonder, what is up with the scissors? Who is this guy? What the hell's going on?
Yeah.
I like the fact that it didn't answer it for me. But what did you think about the overall bloody aspect of it? When he opens his mouth, I remember thinking to myself, what in the hell am I about to see? What did you think?
I mean, I thought that was great. I love the fact that you knew he was going to kill himself, and then they came back and he was already dead, just twitching in the bathtub.
Yeah.
But the best part about that was coming out and mom with a shotgun.
Stop, or my mom will shoot.
Well, she came out with a shotgun. She stole the policeman's gun.
Or, yeah, came out with a gun and gets blown away.
Stop, or my mom will shoot. Nice.
I thought that was the better part of the whole, other than the guy twitching in the bathtub.
That was a massive squib going off on her, too. Like, her whole stomach blew out, and it was so obviously it was a blood bag. But I like that. It was fine.
I noticed
it.
That. You could actually see it under her shirt.
Maybe she's just frumpy.
Right.
She's definitely frumpy. She's like Carrie's mom.
What did you think?
That was adipose.
Hey, one thing, though. Max, let me ask you about this one. I kind of like this whole storyline. The father, the kid, they hire Johnny as the tutor. I love that whole thing.
The ice is
going to break. I mean, the way that scene punched you in the jaw.
Oh, the best part of that scene was when he walks in and says, "Get out of here. I don't want you around my kid." And off camera, you hear that vase smash. Smashes that vase to get the guy's attention. And boy, they just whip around and it screams out that line, "The ice is going to break." That is great.
Yeah, it's
that
good.
That is really, really good.
It's intense.
And in that, intense is what you want in that moment. That's what you want. Yeah. You want intensity. And it pulled it off. It hit the bullseye right there.
It took literally 20 seconds of time and delivered to you something with so much gusto and strength. It told everything about his state of mind. What he was feeling at that moment, the effect that the smashing the vase had on the scene, and it just happened instantly, and it was like, yes, right there, right across my jaw.
And it's the other thing that's great about that. That's a big character moment for him. He doesn't want this.
No,
he hates having this power. He considers it a curse. But now he's gotten into the relationship with the kid, and he really likes the kid. They get along, and the kid only gets along with him because he's so unlike his father. But he opens up to Walken, and they have this relationship, and you can tell here's somebody he cares about again. He wants to do this. He doesn't want to do it, but what other choice does he have? Let the kid go out and play hockey and get killed?
Right.
No, I got to go in there and tell these people. Oh, and then after that, don't you know who I am?
Yeah.
Don't you know who I am? Says, I didn't hire you for your...
I hired you because you were a good tutor, not for a fortune teller.
Yeah, for a fortune teller.
Yeah, and I also like the fact
and
that...
And then he doesn't believe him anyway. He goes in there, "Hey, you ready to suit up, kid?"
Yeah.
Like, no.
Yeah, but you know what else I like, too? When the kid calls Johnny... Johnny calls the kid, and Johnny answers the phone. "Johnny, is that you?" But you look back at the father, pale-faced, in his robe, drinking a scotch. He knows right then and there. You don't need to know any more about the guy than what he's showing you sitting in the chair. It's a guy who's terrified. He knows that, my God, the guy that was just in my house can see the future. Mm-hmm. And he saved my kid's life.
Yep.
And he doesn't know what to do with this information. You can
and
look
at
the father.
And that guy let two kids die.
And he also let two kids die.
Yeah, I mean, it shows me one still of a guy in a chair, and I know exactly what he is at that moment. I mean, that's great filmmaking. We have a big top three coming up. This is going to be fun. It's kind of like a top six. But here you go. One last final clip from the film. We're going to come back and get into our top three best and worst Stephen King adaptations.
I won't. Do it. Put your hand on the scanning screen, and you'll go down in history with me.
As what? The world's greatest mass murderers?
You cowardly bastard! You're not the voice of the people! I am the voice of the people! The people speak through me, not you! It came to me while I slept, Sonny. My destiny. In the middle of the night, it came to me. I must get up now, right now, and fulfill my destiny! Now you put your damn hand on that scanning screen, or I'll hack it off and put it on for you! Do it!
May God forgive me. Congratulations, General.
Complete the sequence, Mr. President.
My destiny.
Let them come up.
This is not necessary, Mr. President. We have a diplomatic solution.
Mr. Vice President, Mr. Secretary, the missiles are flying.
Dead Zone, 1983. There you go. Piece of it right there, the film we talked about to much gusto.
Yes.
Tonight.
Yes.
We did. It all led us to a top three, Max Gumbo Johnson.
I know, it did. It does a double top three.
Max, ask you a question.
Sure.
Have you ever cleaved to another man?
No, never. Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah. Yeah. You've cloven. Claved.
Never. Producer shaking his head.
Have you claved?
Top three, best and worst of Stephen King adaptations. My number three Stephen King adaptation, best... I'm going to Dead Zone. I'm doing it. Number three. I'm just. I can't lie to my list. My number three worst. Gonna go Thinner. Yeah. I didn't like that movie. I just didn't like it.
So we got a Dead Zone and a Thinner.
I got a Dead Zone and a Thinner. Number three for me. Savage.
The novella. Yeah, I haven't read them all. I haven't seen them all. So I'm just gonna go with what I know. Worst. Running Man. It was an okay film, but it's a terrible adaptation. That's worst. And then in conjunction with Running Man, I'll go best. Misery.
Yeah, damn right.
Because he couldn't run.
Running Man and not going anywhere, man.
Right.
Max Gumbo Johnson, roll with it. You're up next. Number three.
All right, number three, best.
Yeah.
going Salem's Lot.
Uh-oh.
Made for TV movie, actually.
I know, right?
That
crazy.
never felt like a TV movie, did it?
Because
it
was still awesome. Creepy.
Because yeah. It was still creepy.
Yeah.
Scares me to the day. To the day.
I keep wondering why they haven't remade that into an actual
movie.
Why is that?
Because it was awesome?
Yeah, but
no
still,
need.
They tried.
It's like low-hanging fruit. Seems like someone would grab this.
They tried again.
That's
no
a good,
point.
Good answer. What's your worst? Number 3.
Number 3 worst, Maximum Overdrive. Actually directed by Stephen King.
You know what he said after that?
Still drunk.
I'm never directing another movie again. Whee!
Sorry. I guess there's something I can't do very well. Is what he said, something like that.
Oh.
I love that movie.
Okay.
I love that movie.
Okay.
That's there's a great a
difference
segue.
Between, there's a difference between loving it and it being a good movie. It's not a good movie.
It's a good movie.
No, it's not. Are you crazy?
We've established
that movie
that
so
yeah,
much.
Max, maybe he's saying it's so bad I loved it kind of thing. Like a campy,
no,
like a,
he's
like
not
a
guilty
pleasure.
I literally love this
he
movie.
He thinks it's a good movie.
Okay.
Let's see if it's on his list.
Let's see if it's on your list, Adam. What's your number 3 best and worst King adaptation?
Number 3 best, probably Night Flyer.
Don't know what the hell that is.
You that's one of your favorite. That's your number 3 favorite.
Yeah,
Night Flyer?
I love Night Flyer.
What the hell is Night Flyer?
Oh, it's about a vampire that flies an airplane that goes around and kills people in airports.
I just put that over on my worst list.
That was a sci-fi film. Right?
I don't know if it was or not, but I love that movie.
Wait,
that was great.
So King wrote this. This was a King
novel?
Yeah,
it was a short story.
I don't know what that is.
Yeah. You don't know what a short story is?
I don't know what that
they're small stories inside bigger books collections.
Oh, tell me more. Tell me more.
And my 3rd worst, Sleepwalkers.
Yeah, that was pretty stupid.
All right.
What about you, Savage?
It's me.
Oh, I'm
number
sorry. I'm so confused.
I know, right? You're in a dead zone.
I was in a dead zone.
Right.
Number 2s. Let me think. See, usually I have a list.
Okay.
I'm going all organic. Oh, I know what my number 2 worst is.
Okay.
I hated Hearts in Atlantis.
That's
what a
it.
Pile
Didn't
of crap
that.
Film that was. I read the book. The book was a pile of crap book. And then the film was like, really? You made it worse? Yeah. Anthony Hopkins, this movie has no sense to it. Whatsoever. If you've ever seen this movie, it's terrible.
Some Stephen King movies are that way.
Oh, this was terrible. Yeah, and some are the exact opposite, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
Yes, they certainly are. Yeah, my number 2 best. Man, I'm trying to leave the Darabont stuff off of this, but I can't. I'm going to go The Mist. I'm going to go The Mist.
The Mist number was 2. Awesome.
The Mist Love was so
the
good.
Mist. That was so good.
That was so surprisingly good to me.
Especially that ending.
You ever seen the black and white version?
Yes, I've watched it.
It's good.
I love Marcia Gay Harden in that movie.
Yeah.
I loved her and hated her at the same time.
Then she played the part perfectly.
I wanted to make love to her and punch her in the face.
Isn't that how you usually do it?
No. Okay. Well,
whatever you want, baby. Huh?
No, I'll join you with The Mist. That was my number 2 as well. Great, real faithful adaptation to the story as well.
The ending was different.
Ending of the movie was
way
better.
Just how they... trapped in the claustrophobic nature of the whole loved it. And Silver Bullet, bad.
I forgot about
Silver Bullet.
Wow, that's going on my worst list.
The actual name of the book was Cycle of the Werewolf.
Yeah.
Yes.
And they changed it
to Silver Bullet. Because it had Gary Busey in it. I'm Gary Busey. There's the Gary Busey helmet protector.
Was that Corey Haim too?
Oh god, that was the stupidest movie. That stupid wheelchair was so stupid, just stupid.
Whose turn is it next? Max Fine. Gumbo Johnson. What's the number 2s?
Number 2 worst. I'm with you. Thinner. Terrible. Awful movie. Love the book. Movie. Oh, God. What an abomination.
What's your best?
Number 2 best, At Pupil.
That's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Pretty good. It's far from pretty good. It's awesome.
Ian McKellen and
Brad Renfro's early Brian Singer movie.
That's right.
Yeah. Oh, that was such a good movie. And
that was good.
It stuck straight to the book.
Well, that was
a short story.
It was a short story, and it was from the different seasons.
Different seasons.
I do believe. Same thing that it came from. The Mist was in that, wasn't it?
Yeah.
No, Mist was in.
Mist was separate, I think.
Night Shift.
Mist
maybe.
Was Night Shift, yeah.
Okay.
Ed Pupil was. Oh, I love that movie.
I think Rita Hayworth in The Shawshank Redemption was in that.
Was in Night Shift. Was in
different seasons, yeah. Mm-hmm.
As was The Body.
The Body.
And then the other one that nobody remembers.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. Someone needs to get around to that
one. Something about the dog, the sun dog or something like that.
Yeah, that's right. Go ahead, Adam. What you got? Number 2s, right?
Number 2, worst, Langoliers.
I don't think I've seen that.
I hated that.
Oh, no, that is on my worst list.
Oh, it's horrible. The CG by itself was so bad.
I've heard people say that about
this. And then Balky from Perfect Strangers in the Corner ripping paper was stupid. but my Pretty second bad. Favorite, Dolores Claiborne.
It was okay.
And that's probably my favorite Stephen King book, honestly.
Really, Dolores Claiborne.
Yeah.
That's your favorite Stephen King book?
Yeah, I love that book.
So you've read Dolores Claiborne and one other one?
I own like half
stop
the
it.
Collection.
Owning them and reading them are 2 different things.
I read most of them.
We're surrounded by Stephen King books.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good book. I've read the book, too, and it was, has Kathy Bates in it, and was it Jennifer Jason Leigh?
Yeah, I think she was in it.
Was that who? Yeah.
That was good, though. Yeah.
Or Bridget Fonda, maybe that's who it was.
It was Bridget Fonda. Yeah, it was Bridget Fonda.
Number one worst, you know it has to be said. It has to be.
Don't say it.
Maximum Overdrive.
Oh, okay, okay, good. Good.
It's the worst pile of excrement that actually, you know, Adam, I could almost turn. I could almost say, what a great film. It's so bad. In the story, first of all, even for Stephen King books, it's a terrible story. It's just so stupid. I mean, Coke machines killing people, for Christ's sake.
Take over. That was a night shift, too, wasn't it? I liked the short story because it was just silly, and it was short. It was literally like, I don't know, 20 pages. I was like, okay, I can kind of get on board this. The movie? Oh.
It was shockingly bad.
It's shockingly, yes. And then that big truck with the big goblin face at the front. Who does that? That is so stupid.
Stephen King.
Savage, have you seen this film?
Yeah, a long time ago. But I remember the goblin face truck. And
It's the Green Goblin.
Yeah,
come on.
It is the Green Goblin, but it is a preposterous premise.
There are two things I remember distinctly about this film. First of all, it does have great AC/DC going for it.
Who made who?
Yeah. But, you know, when the Coke machine spits out Cokes and it hits that guy in the nuts to start
that
off the
Stephen
movie.
King.
Yeah, he puts his coins in the Coke machine and it spits the Coke can out right into his nuts. And that's how the film starts.
And America rolled in laughter. Oh, there we go. Thank you.
It was great.
No, it was terrible.
I'm really having a hard time with my number one, guys.
All right.
I could keep going Darabont, and I think I want to.
All right.
I think I'm going to go with The Green Mile. I could say Stand By Me. I don't know which one. It's such a tie.
Those are great films.
But I had to say The Mist, so I put that number two. I'm going to say The Green Mile. I think it deserves a nod.
It's a good book.
Yeah, it is.
Good movie.
It's such a good movie.
Such that weaselly little bastard.
Percy.
Percy, that's a little SOB.
I'm going to give much love to The Green Mile.
Love The Green Mile. John Coffey.
John Coffey.
Yeah. Mr. Jangles.
Mr. Jangles.
Mr. Jangles.
Oh, that Louisiana dude, Michael Jeter.
I love that guy.
Yeah, he's dead now.
Is he dead?
Yeah, Michael Jeter died.
That's a bummer. He just like Mr. Jangles.
Savage, I want to hear about your Flickr show.
Yeah.
Tell me about your favorite Flickr show based on Stephen King.
Well, these my number ones are very special because I took it a point to read the books before I saw the films. I mean, intentionally. I was like, oh, that's coming out. I'm going to read that book. And Dreamcatcher.
Yeah.
Such a good book.
Steaming
terrible, terrible movie that they just completely changed. It's just like, we're changing this whole thing. So that basically only the title was the same. Vice versa, number one, and there are some great movies. We could say Shawshank. We could say Lean By Me, Green Mile. I mean, there are some great, great Stephen King adaptation films. But Desperation. I have not seen this.
TV movie?
Yeah, I read the book, and it had Ron Perlman as the sheriff.
Oh, you're selling me now.
Yeah. Oh, it's such a good adaptation. And I just loved the book, and it was everything that I wanted it to be.
Read The Regulators. It's a lot better.
Just put Desperation on my worst list. Terrible. I hated it. It's up there with The Stand.
You, Max Gumbel.
Okay, number one.
We'll end with all the drama of the producer. Yeah, Dead Zone.
It's going to be Maximum Overdrive.
Inspiring Stephen King. Yes, best and worst.
Number one worst, The Lawnmower Man.
Oh,
that's a stupid movie. I forgot about that.
It's a bad adaptation.
Have you read the short story?
I read the short story, but it was
Stephen King's The Lawnmower Man. I would have gone to see that movie. That sounds awesome.
That was like 1990.
Something like that. It was Jeff Fahey is a retarded computer programmer. Yeah. What the hell?
It was almost like Flowers for Algernon in a little way.
That's so stupid. But you know, Savage, he reminded me in that movie of Lloyd from Dumb and Dumber, Harry, Jeff Daniels. Same haircut. It was the same exact haircut.
Pierce Brosnan in that too or something?
Yeah.
I don't know. I've tried to erase that from my memory. That was the worst movie. And it had nothing to do with the story except the name.
Yeah.
Didn't they make like three or four Lawnmower Mans too?
Yeah, they made like four. No, they've made more than two.
Really? Oh.
Who went back for more of that?
Well, the yard grew again.
Yeah, I was going to say, you have to get your yard cut once in a while.
Well, eventually somebody's going to say, we're going to make The Lawnmower Man, where the guy takes off all his clothes and eats all the grass while the guy's listening to a baseball game.
You know what I remember about this? I think I remember that during the same week I seen The Lawnmower Man and Pumpkinhead in the same week.
Oh, I would watch. I'd give Pumpkinhead. Like, I remember an Academy Award over Lawnmower Man.
I remember going to see both those films at the same time, like within 2 days of each other. I remember this thinking, I think I like Pumpkinhead better.
You think?
Yeah,
I know I like Pumpkinhead.
Hey, Chucklehead, producer.
Wait, you know, number one,
good one.
We're doubling down this week. What you got, Max?
All right, I took Shawshank off the list because I was like, okay, that's just too easy.
Yeah.
So I went with Stand By Me.
Absolutely. That's a tough call. What a great movie.
Good film. It's a fantastic movie. I remember seeing that when I was a kid after I read the book. I've never seen any of the movies prior to ever reading any of the books. That's crazy. I never thought about that.
Okay.
I've read all the books before I saw any of the movies.
Adam, what's your number one? We're going to wrap this up here.
Number one worst, easily, hands down, The Stand.
Really?
Because M-O-O-N spells sucks.
Yep. M-O-O
seriously,
spells.
It had a... Ugh. I wanted this build-up. I wanted everything. Yeah. It was the worst ending.
It's a great book.
Oh, my God. It was so horrible.
Never read it. Too long. Couldn't commit.
Oh.
Couldn't commit to The Stand.
Number one.
Number one. I'm going to have to say The Mist, because I just absolutely love that ending.
Film.
Yeah, that's a 10, too. Just like The Dead Zone. Perfect 10.
Maximum Overdrive.
It's a good one.
Yeah. Are we done?
We are.
That's it?
Except, there's a reveal involved.
Yeah, but one quick thing. Let's make it real quick. I want to ask you this question. Any Stephen King book that you would die to see made into a movie, that you think
Tower.
Should be made into a movie?
The
you
Dark
say
Tower.
Dark Tower?
Yeah.
Dark Tower's coming. Say? The Long Walk.
The Long Walk. Don't know what that is, actually. What do you say?
Long Walk or Rage?
Oh, Rage? No.
Oh, come on. I love Rage.
No. I don't know what that is.
That's not even a pimple on the ass of The Long Walk.
Sells, come on. Sells good, too.
I just need to bring
Cujo. Or an actual great adaptation of The Running Man.
I want to see The Talisman. Yeah, my God, bring
Peter
us
Stroud,
The Talisman.
With Peter Stroud, yeah.
Yes, I love that book. Every time I think of that book, I think of that Madonna video where she's doing the Madonna, the Marilyn Monroe, Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend. What was that?
Material Girl.
Material Girl. I always associate that with The Talisman for some reason.
I have no idea. We're talking about Madonna. We've brought up what we've let in from Walken to Cronenberg, to King, to Madonna. Nice, Max.
Every time I think of The Talisman, I think of that video.
Max,
I guess that
those are things that do not work in synchronicity, I'm just telling you.
They
hey,
work
listen,
from
guys,
anybody.
All I'm going to say is someone please remake Cujo, but make it with a ferret.
Yeah.
I want to see that.
Nice marmot.
What's wrong with Cujo?
I just want to see it remade with a ferret.
It's not that good. That's what's wrong with
Cujo
it.
Cujo's pretty bad. Hey, let's get on to the next one, man.
Sure.
10, Dead Zone. Watch it.
Yep. I'm with you on that
Thanks.
One.
Thanks. Savage? No? Okay. We're gonna move on. Max, I do believe it's your turn next week.
Bring a 10, Max. Bring a
Bring 10. A 10. Reveal this sucker, man. What you got?
I'm torn between three lovers.
Me, James, and Adam? What
no.
are you
talking about? No, I think he cleaves to another man.
I'm thinking of three movies. I got three movies in mind. I'm going to pick one now. I'm going to go Sunset Boulevard.
There you go. I know you're apprehensive because you said, well, we kind of talked about All About Eve not too long ago, which,
it
Max,
has
we're
been
talking,
a while.
It's been like 5 months ago.
I don't know. It's just fresh in my mind because we brought it up on All About Eve that Norma Desmond should have been one of the top three divas, but nobody could pick her because nobody's seen Sunset Boulevard. A couple months ago, they showed Sunset Boulevard at the Bell Court. I said, okay, I've never seen it. If there's any way to see it, I'm going to go see it at the theater, on the big screen, at the Bell Court, and I was blown away. I loved it.
All right.
One of the greatest movies I've ever seen in my life.
Okay.
It's fantastic.
You're going to love it. All right. Next week's going to be
it
real
It might
hot.
Be a three.
It's going to have smoke. He's going to do that just to get underneath your skin.
If you say it's three, you're kicked off the show.
That's next
it
week, guys.
It gets a three just for William Holden being in it. You got to go up from there.
I'm excited. Let's talk about that next week. This week was Dead Zone, 1983, David Cronenberg. That's how this one ends. So thanks for tuning into The Queue. You know the routine. You go to thequeuefilmcast.net. Yeah, .net. You go there. Give us your review of this one. Tell us what you think of it. Tell us what you think of us thinking of it.
Yeah. Tell me if I'm wrong.
Tell me how right I am.
You are wrong.
Everyone, please go tell James how wrong he is.
That's next week. We're going to talk about Sunset Boulevard. What year?
Oh, gosh, 1955, 56?
Something like that. Yeah.
Somewhere around there.
Looking forward to it. I think that's a good follow-up to this one. That's next week, guys, Sunset Boulevard. Until then, however did you say,
the ice is going to break!
The ice is going to break!
The ice is going to break!
Next week, we'll cleave onto another show. So we'll see you.
I got a fever, and the only prescription is more cowbell. All the time.